two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
KSL's unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
All right, everybody. Thanks for being a part of the program. Thanks for hanging out with us. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell, going into your weekend, man. We're already jumping in here. Scott, how you feeling tonight going into the weekend?
I feel phenomenal.
Look at you.
Yes. Cannot believe that it's a Friday.
I know.
So much exciting stuff going on this weekend.
More games being played.
Lots of sports.
Yep. Yes.
Big Ten's opening up. Mountain West is opening up. BYU's having a good year.
Scott, plus it's the World Series.
The World Series.
Right? I mean, yes. The reality is, if it comes down to it, I will not be watching the World Series. I'll be watching whatever other football game might be on. But, yeah, you've got all sorts of things. In terms of the NFL, there are games of interest. A little bit later in the show, we're going to be talking with Tim Hughes, part of our Silver and Black Attack, as he goes down and calls the game as the PA announcer over the big speakers at Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas. He's one of the few people on the planet we know who actually get into the stadium. So we'll talk to him. Our BYU insider Mitch Harper's coming up in just a little while, but we're going to start things off talking about the college football playoff. And as we get closer and closer to the Pac-12 getting underway, everybody else is underway this weekend, but as we get closer to the Pac-12 getting underway, I'm wondering how a Pac-12 team could get into the playoff considering they're only playing 7 games, and that's where we're going to start things right here on the program. Let's do it.
The Cut at 7:05. The unquestioned, undeniable, unrivaled top sports story of the hour. It's 7:05. Here's what made the cut.
Okay, so Scott, right off the bat here, I know we've kind of piled on the Pac-12, kind of deservedly, right, during all this, like,
hey, I thought there was not going to be a season, and the fact that they're actually trying, they're going to be the last one to start, and they are having one, that says a lot. So, I'm grateful.
Silver lining, right?
I'm grateful, yeah, for whatever there is.
So as this thing starts up and as we're trying to figure out a little bit more about, you know, college football and the playoff and how that's going to work, I mean, the playing field is never even in college about picking who these teams are to go into the college football playoff. But it's even more tilted this year. You're going to have Pac-12 teams that have only played 7 games, if they're lucky, because there are a lot of folks who say, no, there's no way they're even going to get through this season, because they're going 6 weeks in a row and then a 7th week in a row of that quote-unquote championship week. And I'm not here to poo-poo whether or not they're even going to get through this season. That's kind of a Dave McCann thing to go. They're not even going to make it through week 4 before COVID hits. They got to shut it all back down again. I don't want to look that negatively on it. What I do want to know is how does a Pac-12 team being 7-0, even an Oregon team, how can they put themselves up against a one-loss SEC team who might be 9-1 or 10-1 going into a college football playoff committee deciding on who's going to go into the college football playoff? Is this a year the Pac-12 should just say, you know what, you get your 7 games and we shouldn't be considered for the playoff because we've only played 7 games? That's, you know, 30% fewer than everybody else has had to play.
With what has already happened in college football, and namely the Big 12, if it would, like, you were looking at teams like Texas, Oklahoma, maybe a team now, maybe the only shot that the Big 12 has is in Oklahoma State, and they're probably going to lose one, if not two, games before this is
all. Yeah, they're not going to have anybody, I don't think.
So that they're kind of they're the one P5 that's probably out right now. Then you the SEC, here's what's going to happen. Okay, you're the only team that probably could make that statement is going to be Georgia. And they're going to be 9-1 and they're going to play Alabama, who's probably undefeated in the SEC championship, and they're going to lose twice and they're going to be out. And that's whatever scenario is going to happen. It's probably a one-loss SEC school going up against Alabama, and Alabama's going to beat whoever that is. Florida, you know, I don't know who it's going to be. Florida, Georgia, you know, probably one of those schools. Who knows? But Georgia and Florida, I believe, play. So one of those teams is for sure going to be out. And you're going to have at best one undefeated school in the SEC, and the rest with two losses. Then so you're going to have Alabama in. You're going to have Clemson in because they're just going to they have. I mean, if you want to talk about a really easy schedule, it's the ACC and it's Clemson. They're just far and above better, and Trevor Lawrence is just better as a football player than he was a year ago. In fact, if I'm a betting person, I say Clemson would be your national champion this year. But regardless, then it's the Big Ten. And the Big Ten is kind of, you know, who knows. But so let's say you're going to have Ohio State because they're really the best team in the Big Ten, and they've got to win out to be in consideration for that. So now you have the Pac-12, and I think a group of five school or an independent like BYU does get in the discussion, provided that they are undefeated by the time they get to that schedule. The Pac-12, you don't have to win 12 games, but you get on a roll and you win seven games in the Pac-12. Yeah, you absolutely are in the middle of this. But here's the biggest problem aren't the other schools in the country that the Pac-12 has to concern itself with. It's what you said in the very beginning. The biggest deterrent is playing 7 weeks in a row, and that's going to be a bit of a challenge for, I mean, BYU, who's playing 10 games this year, maybe 11, maybe 12, BYU has had to cancel a game already this year.
Yep.
And so I see it really hard, and you see Florida had issues. You've seen these other schools. There have been issues around the country. I just see it really hard for a school in the Pac-12 to go 7 weeks in a row and be considered. But there'll be a team. If it's a high-profile team, see, Oregon's going to be ranked high as it is. And these other schools, USC maybe a little bit, but a team like Utah, I mean, if Utah wins and keeps winning, it's going to be hard for them to get high enough in 7 weeks in the polls to really have serious consideration just because they started so late. Late start, 7 weeks in a row is a deterrent, but the fact that other schools and other conferences have kind of left it open, the Pac-12, if they get an undefeated team, could seriously be in consideration, I think, for the college football playoffs.
I wonder if there's if you're a Pac-12, you know, kind of honk, you just want the Pac-12 to do well. And if you're a Utah fan, it does well for you if the Pac-12 is succeeding. So do you want – I mean, is there a possibility that Oregon gets in if you had – and how insane would it be? I'm not saying over BYU, that kind of thing. I don't think BYU's schedule is enough for people to realistically say, hey, this is the same kind of thing. Because you're talking about – even in the Pac-12, seven games that might not be, eight or nine games in the Big 12 or in the Big 10, but it's still seven games in a conference that's much more difficult to play in than, a pieced together COVID-19 schedule. But that being said, going through, I've heard this argument about, look, BYU deserves all this credit. They have made something out of nothing, and the college football playoff committee should say, you know what, you should be commended for your efforts just by making this thing happen. And on the flip side, the Pac-12 hasn't done enough to make it to where they could be considered. And I'm wondering if that's the case. If the Pac-12 just gets left out because people go, way to go, you only played six or seven games as it is, we're not going to let you in the college football playoff.
All right. So let's compare Utah to BYU. Okay. Utah has four wins pretty much guaranteed on their schedule right now. They have two games.
Well, what does that say about how bad those Pac-12 teams are?
I understand, but those four wins, it's, you know, it's Colorado, it's Arizona, it's Ohio, it's Oregon State, and it's UCLA. And so do you say, is UCLA better than Houston? Is Oregon State better than North, you know, Texas State, you know, UT San Antonio? I mean, you know, you probably could argue that even those bad schools are better than some of the ones. But let's just take out the really bad people on BYU's schedule, and let's just take seven games.
Are your best seven games matched up against the best seven games of Utah?
Right,
to play?
And so Utah's going to play in those seven games. Let's just say they go all the way to the Pac-12 championship and win it. They're going to play USC. They're going to play Arizona State, and they're probably going to play Oregon.
Yeah, and if they won all seven of those.
And if you won all seven of those, you could make a strong argument that that's a pretty good season, at least compared to like BYU. It's a better strength of schedule than what BYU had.
All right, let's take the break here. We're going to come back. We'll talk to the expert in all things Utah. Bill Riley is going to join us next right here on KSL's Unrivaled, the voice of the Utes. Stay right here with us. More to go on a Friday edition of KSL's Unrivaled, KSL News Radio.
All right, welcome back to KSL's Unrivaled. Scott Mitchell, Alex Carey. I know we're going to see the Pac-12 in 2 weeks, but we're going to see the Big Ten next, what?
Weekend, man.
Yeah, this weekend.
All exciting.
A lot of stuff.
Mountain West firing
back up
again.
A lot of stuff is happening. Good football games in the NFL, and a lot to look forward to.
We're excited because there's a lot to talk about still, and we've been you know, piecing together the season here as it's gone along, and we've been able to watch some good football. And, of course, here locally being able to have BYU playing and playing some decent football has been fun to be able to talk about. Joining us right now, however, he's the voice of the Utah Utes. Bill Riley joins us on the program. Bill, how's everything up on the hill? Everything looking like it's shaping up like we're going to see some football on November 6th?
Well, that's what they tell me. I don't get to see anything, but they tell me everything is going well.
So that's what I was going to say is that what – I know that the SIDs, the sports information directors at these schools, they do the, oh, shoot, we can't have you guys up for media availability. It's like a dream come true for them because they just go, well, you can join us on a computer. What are you gathering from the coaches so far and from the players? We've watched some of these Zoom interviews with these players. What have you been impressed with that allows you to be impressed by so far?
Well, I get to talk to a lot of people, whether it's a Zoom interview or text messages or getting people on the phone, and it sounds like camp's moving along really well. They haven't had any major injuries up there, which is good with the crazy offseason. They like their offense an awful lot. I talked to Kyle Whittingham on our coaches show the other night, and he said, you know, they've narrowed it down to two quarterbacks. I think we can all assume it's either Rising or Bentley. And he told me, he goes, whoever wins the job, we will feel good about. We've got two really good quarterbacks. And he always says, oh, well, we've got three. But to be very fair, they've got the two guys, and they feel good about that. So, you know, on the offensive side of the football, I think things are good. Defensively, I think he likes the talent he's got, in the secondary especially. Up front, everybody's talking about up front, you know, they're replacing starters. But you guys know, Utah rolls 7, 8, 9, 10 defensive linemen a game. So, yeah, Fotu and Anai and Penasini are gone, but those guys that are going to be playing have played tons of snaps, so it's not like they're new to the game. They'll be new starters, but the secondary is really the area, and they love their talent, but as Kyle said the other day, we just need a lot of reps. He said, we need as many reps as we can possibly get in between now and the opener to get these guys game ready. So again, I think he likes the talent he's got, but he just wants to get them as many reps as possible.
I wonder if they would ever consider the ones against the ones just to get the best possible, you know, speed and talent and effort and energy that you could, as opposed to maybe, you know, a scout team or a look team type of thing. I don't know. I just thought of that as you were saying that. You know, it's about reps, but it's also about the quality of reps and simulating as much as you can in a game situation. I'm curious.
Well, you know, the scrimmages they do, Scott. I mean, last Saturday they had a scrimmage where the offense stood out. They're going to have their second and last scrimmage this Saturday. So, but it wouldn't surprise me if in the course of just the daily practice up there, they did some of that this year, especially just because, as you said, the defense especially really needs those reps.
Speaking of the defensive line, I was going through some of these players. I know there's some young guys in the secondary that might play, Nate Ritchie, Clark Phillips III. And I'm wondering if any of these defensive linemen, Van Fillinger, Xavier Carlton, are they going to see any time, or are they just they're just not ready yet?
No, Kyle Whittingham. I asked him. I said, you're going to play true freshman this year. Starting wise, I think two of the guys you mentioned, Ritchie and Phillips, both have a chance to start. But again, as we said with the defensive line, there's three true freshmen on the defensive line that I think you're going to see getting reps. On the inside, we've got a mess of Pututaus at Utah this year. Haouti is the oldest, but the youngest, Tennessee Pututau, just back from his mission, true freshman. He has stood out in camp so far, as have Fillinger and Carlton on the end. So I would be very surprised, Scott, if we don't see all three of those guys playing. Whether they start or not remains to be seen. But we know the way they roll fresh bodies in on that defensive line. I'd be really surprised if all three of those guys, Pututau, Fillinger, and Carlton, don't play quite a bit this year.
Let's go to from the young guys to like the oldest guy. Britton Covey has had one of the most weird journeys, we've seen of any local guy. We've seen this type of thing down at BYU, I think, a lot when, I think Taysom Hill might be comparable where it's like, man, these guys just keep getting hurt or on top of, all the other things that have gone on. Where is he now in his development? Because I think there are a lot of folks that want to see so much more because they saw so much out of a young Britton Covey. Where is he at right now, kind of mentally and prep-wise for this season?
Well, mentally, that kid, he's a Covey. So let's just start right there. He's always sharp.
He has seven habits. Got it, yeah.
Well, Guy Holliday and Kyle Whittingham and even some of the guys have said this is the best physically he's looked, even going back to his freshman year.
Wow.
He's 23 years old now. He's as physically strong as he's ever been, and the quickness and the wiggle and the speed is all back too. And you're going to see him line up, Alex, as a running back. You're going to see him line up in the slot. You're going to see him line up wide as a wide receiver. You're going to see him in fly sweeps. Andy Ludwig said we're going to use him as a guerrilla warrior. He's going to be everywhere in this Utah offense, which I know makes your partner and mine, Scott Mitchell, very happy.
the spreading everything out is always fun from a quarterback standpoint because you have all these – he's one of these just, back pocket, weapons for anybody. And especially when you have a new quarterback who can just go, I can rely on this guy.
That's exactly right. And I think and Holliday was pretty pointed yesterday when we talked to him. He said, hey, this may be a pandemic year, but he said, we've had plenty of time to work. Wide receivers and quarterbacks, he said, we got no excuses. He said, we've had plenty of time to work and get to know one another and know what to do. So Holliday and the wide receiving core are not going to use this weird year that we've had with no spring football as any kind of excuse. That's kind of how Guy Holliday is. He's kind of a no-nonsense guy. But at the end of the day, he said, hey, we're ready to go, and we're on the same page as our quarterbacks.
I've never asked you this question, but who do you think is going to be the starting quarterback? What's your gut telling you?
I thought for a long time, Scott, that it would be Jake Bentley based upon his experience. But the more this goes on and the more I kind of read between the lines and some comments, I think Cam Rising has got a real opportunity to be the quarterback. He knows the system. I asked Kyle about arm talent. He said the arm talent is comparable with both those quarterbacks. And there's an athleticism to Cam Rising that the other two quarterbacks don't have. He's not a, not a running quarterback, but he can run if he has to. He's the best athlete of the three. So, and I thought it was interesting last weekend after they selected captains, Kyle Whittingham said, because Jake Bentley was selected a captain, he said, don't read anything into Jake Bentley being selected a captain and starter status. One doesn't have anything to do with the other. So I don't know for sure. But as much as I was on Bentley early and throughout the offseason because of his experience, I kind of think Cam Rising's got a real chance to be that guy.
Would Andy Ludwig ever do the you know, the kind of switch them out interchangeably type of thing, or have like a situational, or is that too complicated to have a two quarterback, you know, situation that they've had in the past before?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I don't think, like I said, Cam Rising's not a running back who's turned into a quarterback or anything like that. He's a quarterback. So I don't think Andy necessarily comes from, I mean, if he's going to run Wildcat, maybe he does it with one of his tailbacks instead, or with Britton Covey. You know, Covey's a guy that's a former quarterback, so maybe he could have some fun trick plays there. But I couldn't see a situation where they rotate quarterbacks now.
He's Bill Riley. He's the voice of the Utes. And we love having Bill on because we get a little bit more insight than even Scott can offer sometimes. And that's and that's nutty to think that. Bill, we appreciate it. And have fun watching a little bit more football this weekend now that we're adding conferences here and there. And we appreciate you being a part of the program this week.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
Okay, taking the break here. We'll come back. We got more to go after news, traffic, and weather right here on KSL News Radio.
KSL's unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back. It is KSL's unrivaled. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell, thanks for being with us. 24 hours away from BYU and Texas State, down in Provo at Lavelle Edwards Stadium. You'll be able to get the pregame, the pre-pregame right here on KSL News Radio starting at 6 o'clock. Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte will walk you up to the pregame coverage. And then you'll have the kickoff at around 8:15-ish on ESPN. BYU back on the national stage, and joining us again on our show is the host of Cougar Sports Saturday, our BYU insider for KSLSports.com, Mitch Harper. Mitch, is BYU healthy this week? That's, I guess, the question. COVID and otherwise, I think that's the all-encompassing question nowadays.
Yeah, for the most part, guys, they're healthy. They're doing well. It feels like COVID's kind of taking a back seat, you know, where they lost that game against Army, but been kind of out of sight and out of mind. I think they've done a nice job navigating the pandemic. And as far as injuries go, I think this is a week where we see some guys that have been out for extended periods of time returning. Tristan Hodge, offensive lineman, he's back from his bout with COVID-19 and pneumonia. He's returning. Keanu Saliapaga, another offensive lineman. And then last year's leading rusher, Sione Finau, he's expected to give it a go, too. He dressed last week at Houston, but this could be an opportunity for him to play. The questions personnel-wise will be James Empey and Gunnar Romney, but I expect Gunnar Romney to give it a go. He's been battling a hamstring injury, but I'm hearing that he's going to be able to try to play and try to maintain that chemistry between him and Zach Wilson, keep things rolling with this BYU offense.
Well, he's worried that Dax Milton's going to take over his spot. Hamstrings are hard. They're hard to get healthy once you start having one. If I could just make a comment really quick. It's a pet peeve of mine. Alex said that you and Matt were going to walk up to the pregame or something. I don't know. And I just have to tell you, you have to run. There's no walking on a football field ever. It's just, it's unacceptable.
On the hop, so, yeah, so, you yelled yeah, the guys. Yeah.
If we're going anywhere, we're running. this game feels a little bit like a one a couple of weeks ago. I mean, BYU is a 30-point favorite, and everyone's feeling pretty good about an impressive win at Houston, a lot of praise locally and nationally. Are we going to see another one of those weeks? Or is this BYU team going to really come out and kind of go full throttle and win decisively?
Yeah, I think it's a fair question. You know, Kalani's messaging this week is to stay humble. He had a team meeting on Monday where he addressed the players and basically said, you got to stay humble. Basically, don't read your headlines, because 2 weeks ago they did that against UTSA, mm-hmm. and it was a much closer call than it needed to be. So I expect that BYU should play well. I think this Texas State team is not as good or not as talented as that UTSA squad, especially in the trenches. And Texas State has a lot of injuries in their secondary. So this should be an opportunity for BYU's offense to put up big numbers through the air and kind of put this thing away, I think, midway through the third quarter at the latest for Zach Wilson. But, I mean, they got to take care of business. They got to be dialed in and focused. You know, Zach Wilson will be. We hear every week he's doing the 10-hour drives. He's studying the playbook, all that stuff. But it's everyone else trying to understand that you are now the hunted. You're now the target. And that's a new wrinkle to BYU football under Kalani Sitake is that they're no longer this team that catches folks off guard. They're now a team that programs look at and say they're circling on this calendar to try and get a signature win. So they got to be dialed in, but I expect they will be.
What do you think the like a sweet spot is for BYU in terms of winning? You know, I was thinking about Clemson last week, and Trevor Lawrence had 5 touchdowns in the first half that he threw, and they didn't let off the gas. And they're playing another ACC team, and they know that they can put 70 up on those guys. BYU knows they could probably – it's funny because if you're like the number one team in the country, you score 70 points, people go, good for you. If BYU hangs 70 on Texas State, I feel like people will like almost look negatively on that thing. But fans want a massive blowout, despite the fact that I think that's what they want, those style points in this time of year to go to 6-0 and then possibly 7-0 next week after Western Kentucky going into that Boise State game. And so what is that fine line as to what Kalani can do to absolutely annihilate the person in front of you and get those national style points?
Yeah, I think that, you know, anywhere from 45-point win and up, I think it is fair game. I think BYU has got to get the style points. I know it's something that Kalani probably doesn't want to worry about, but if they want to honestly have a conversation in December and late November about them hovering around the playoff talk, which is still kind of a long shot, but if they want to be in that mix and have the conversation entertained about them, that's the only thing that can help them is just dominance, because that's what the playoff committee looks at, is advanced analytics, and the way you dominate your opponent is something that's going to factor in to those advanced analytics and how they determine who are the 4 best teams this year. So if BYU has a chance to beat this team by 60 points, you got to do it. Because I think that they have to put it up and run it up. And I know there's that balance between respecting the coaching staff and things like that. But if you pull Zach Wilson and you put in Baylor Romney and you're running Sione Finau and you're still having success, but you can't fault BYU for that. So they should look for opportunities to win big against Texas State, in my opinion.
All people care about on the national stage, because they're going to check in, they're going to have the Heisman watch. They have it every week. And Zach Wilson's on that watch. Like, he's already created national buzz for BYU. And above anything else, when people hear about Zach Wilson, they need to hear an impressive performance, whatever it is. And I'm just telling you, these coaches need to factor this into whatever they do, and they need to give him an opportunity to still continue to be in that discussion. It helps the school. It helps everything if that happens. I have to believe that having 6,000 people in the stands may help give BYU a little bit of energy. But I'm curious, Mitch, of what does Texas State what kind of challenge do they present? What is their strength?
Yeah, I think the biggest strength for them is they got some quality running backs. Skill position wise, they've got some good players, but this is a really young football team at Texas State, and it's kind of a from the ground up type operation that Jake Spavital, the head coach, he used to be the OC at Texas A&M when Johnny Manziel was playing with the Aggies, so he knows good quarterback play, and he knows that BYU's offense is going to be a tall order for his defense that's suffered a lot of injuries on that side of the ball. But their skill players are pretty good, and that's kind of a common theme with a lot of these Group of Five programs, is that they're going to have some transfers and guys that maybe fell through the cracks, but they got good measurables and good speed. So that'll pose some challenges, but this to me is by far the weakest team BYU has faced this season. But they are a squad that's hung around with teams, so they feel like they maybe can hang around, but I just think their injuries are going to be too much for them to hang around with BYU.
We're going to be at the stadium tomorrow, Mitch, and so will 6,000 other BYU proud supporters. Maybe a couple Texas State fans will show up in the mix with their Bobcat gear on, but what have the team and Kalani said this week, maybe about having at least a couple more people in the stands this week instead of just being total emptiness and white noise in the stadium?
Yeah, I think they're pretty excited to have the fans there, and just because you can't simulate or replicate that noise, whether good or bad, as Kalani said, you just can't replicate that when you're in an empty stadium. Just the emotions that that run through the stadium. I mean, last week, that was a huge thing for BYU was once they got momentum back on their side after that shank kick, the onside kick, all that, you could sense the energy from BYU fans in it. And it, I think it was a tangible thing that kind of helped lift BYU over Houston and got them rolling in that fourth quarter. So, I mean, I don't think you're going to need some sort of comeback in this one, but I still think they're excited to have fans back in those stands because we're all just clamoring to get back to normalcy and seeing fans at Lavelle Edwards Stadium, you know, eating some Cougar Tails, eating some kale corn popcorn. That's normalcy in a fall Saturday in Provo. So that right there to me is a big thing for the team going forward.
Another national stage type game for BYU to be able to showcase Zach Wilson and hopefully score a lot of points against Texas State this weekend and possibly go 6-0, maybe even creep up and edge themselves into that top 10. Mitch Harper, thanks for joining us. You can join, of course, the guys on Cougar Sports Saturday tomorrow here on KSL News Radio. Matt Biamonte, Mitch Harper. Thanks, Mitch, for hanging out, man.
Hey, no problem, guys. Take care.
We'll take the break. We'll come back. We got more to go. Hey, around the corner, MVPs going into the weekend. Stay with us right here on KSL News Radio.
Okay, welcome back to KSL's Unrivaled. Scott Mitchell and Alex Curie. And, you know, if you miss a part of our show, you can always download the KSL Sports app. And even if you catch all of our show, still download the KSL Sports app because not only can you listen to our show, but there's a lot of other great insight into sports. And we don't miss a thing with KSL Sports. So download it. It's free. And you have it wherever you go, and it could be on any one of your smart devices.
Let me run something past you, Scott. I read an article today. First of all, one thing that we saw, of course, yesterday was that the NFL is moving the Seahawks-Cardinals game to an evening game on Sunday night, just in case the Raiders and the Bucks end up being postponed until another day. So they're anticipating it. They're at least kind of they don't want to be they don't want to leave. Sunday Night Football is such a ratings machine that they don't want to leave nothing there. And so I don't think this is you know, the NFL going, oh, for sure this game's likely to be postponed. It's more like we don't want to take any chances. We want to make sure there is a Sunday night game on. And look, you know what that means? For the third time this year, I get to see my Seahawks on Sunday Night Football. So, well, very exciting.
If there's one thing the NFL is doing right, it's Sunday Night Football.
I mean, they're just scheduling great games.
They always have great games, and they always have that flexibility built into it, and it's great. I mean, you know, you look at some of these other games. You know, I a while ago saw this touting of Thursday Night Football between the New York Giants and the Philadelphia Eagles. And then traditionally, that would be a great game. But right now,
not this year.
That's the worst game in the world.
Well, I know. And
it's terrible.
So my kid early in the year was like, the Jaguars and the Colts. And I was like, I'm going ahead and hard pass on that one. Interesting deal getting ready for the weekend. Just being flexible. Imagine how in years past, you know, the NFL, everything was so immutable about it. They took over everything. There was nothing that would stop a game from starting. But now they go, let's get ahead of this thing and make sure that we can be flexible, push game times, things like that. It's moving the mountain a little bit but it is a little bit more flexible because you don't have as many fans to mess around with. Now, in Arizona, right. I think they have a handful of where the Seahawks are going to be playing this weekend. I think they have a handful of fans that can come to the stadium. I think it's only like, you know, it's less than 5,000. So you can tell a group of less than 5,000, hey, the game's getting moved to the evening. Telling 70,000 is a lot tougher. And so I think it's interesting. But I'm interested to see what tomorrow's going to bring because my two boys are going to their first BYU game of the year. And they're going to go in. And I'm really anxious to see how well they sit in their seat. My son told me this. He goes, I can wear a mask for 4 hours. I do it at school for 7, so I'll be fine. And I was like, yeah. I go, yeah, if you go and get a cougar tail, you can take a little – you can eat that cougar tail for 15 minutes and take a little break with your mask off while you eat. So, yeah, I'm excited for this whole weekend. And you know what?
being excited for the weekend, being excited for sports, it gets me all excited. And you know what? We got our unrivaled MVPs to kick things off here to round out our first hour, so let's do it.
The unrivaled MVP. Scott and Alex crowned tonight's most valuable player, the unrivaled MVP.
Before we get into the MVP, too, I wanted to bring this up. There's an article that I read this week about Julian Edelman, who's a guy I don't really like.
Yeah, he's kind of...
He's pretty cocky, and he's just been one of those guys. And he does so well. Like, I've always just kind of not liked the guy, you know? Yeah. Like, he and Tom Brady were just this, like, force, you know? And fill in the blank with whatever quick slot receiver over the years that Tom Brady's had. He's made him into successes. And then there was this article that says, what's going on with Patriots wide receiver Julian Edelman? He's dropping more passes than we've seen. He's had problems. He's had some performance issues. And I went, duh. It's the same reason the Patriots are 2-4 right now, or whatever, 2-3. They don't have Tom Brady as their quarterback anymore. Can we just say
he may have an impact on things?
Like, we don't have to question that anymore. When was the last time the Patriots even went 2-4? I mean, and then saying, what's wrong with Julian Edelman? And then they're like, their beat writer supposes that it might be an injury that we're not being told about. I'm like, yeah. He had a Tom Bradyectomy during the offseason. And trying to recover from that surgery is tough, man. You're never going to recover from it. His salad days are over, dude. I mean, it's a tough deal. I'm going to go with my MVP first, though, Scott. Cause I think,
you go. You're on a roll, Alex. I'm just kind of letting you go right
I'm
now.
Mad about things. No, but I'm going to throw my MVP to the Mountain West and the Big Ten getting started with football this week. When pressure started to mount, and everybody said, no, 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 we're not moving. You remember when Ryan Day was like, I think we can't. Like, this is 2 months ago. Ryan Day goes, can we please have the conversation about having a football game before January 1st? And people were like, no, 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 you're not allowed. And the Big Ten and the Mountain West, whatever that pressure was, they figured it out. The way to figure it out is you get better testing, you go through the procedures, you work them out, you do it in a smart way, and you're flexible, and you can say, if something happens, we will cancel these games or postpone them and push them back. So congratulations for joining the mix, the Mountain West and the Big Ten this weekend, and football is back underway. And I'm glad for the Utah State fans who get to see their team play again this weekend, and a big game up at Boise State this weekend. So that's my MVP.
Yeah, and I don't know why the Pac-12 couldn't have done the same thing, and only for the sake of just having some flexibility in your schedule. And the Big Ten and the Mountain West have done that, and so you feel like – there's a high likelihood they're going to get a decent number of games in this season, and we're going to see some good games. I mean, you've got Nebraska and Ohio State right off the bat. You've got Boise State and Utah State here locally. So that's what's fun is when it's conference only, they come out swinging and you got to be ready to play, and that only helps us as fans. So I really like that.
I think there was I don't know if it was last year or the year before. Remember when they played Tennessee Tech? And I think and it was like Jordan Love threw for like 7 touchdowns. They won like 73-10 or something. You know, those are the ones that you want to warm up with. And there's no such thing. Boise State comes to town, and that's your biggest game of the year, and it's on the first week of the year. So yeah, I hope they can come out and shock them. I think it's cool because Jason Shelley's going to be playing. He's obviously an experienced quarterback. They've got basically all the skill position guys who transferred out of Utah to Utah State. Gary Anderson's going to figure it out with those guys. So good. All right, those are my MVP. What are yours, Scott?
Okay, I got one. This is kind of a fun one. My MVP is Dwayne Wade, who is just very casually strolling down a beach in California.
He's retired now, isn't he?
Totally retired. Okay. Yeah, he's strolling on a beach. Come on. And he accidentally gets caught in a photo of a guy, Ryan Bosch, who is proposing on the beach to his girlfriend, Katie Ryan. So Ryan Bosch is proposing to Katie Ryan, and Dwayne Wade ends up in the picture of them actually proposing. And so he photobombed without knowing that he was in the photo, and he has his hand over his heart in the picture.
That is cute.
Like, oh, you know, like.
Oh, so you're look at this, look at this. Is he walking next to Gabrielle Union?
It's some guy. Not his wife.
Well, interesting.
And anyways, he comes up to the couple and he takes a photo with them and just said, it was so dope to witness you guys' love. And so the couple is actually going to invite Dwayne Wade and Gabrielle Reese to their wedding. And what would be even cooler is if they actually show up. They'll send a gift or something.
Oh, look.
I wonder how many times I've shown up in someone's photo or how many photos I have of actually famous people.
I love the idea. Look, I would just say this. Hey, Dwayne, here's your invitation. If you can't make it, you know, we're registered at these places if you want to buy our entire list for us. Yeah. So, all right. Scott, we'll come back. We got our second hour next. We got so much more to go on the program. So many things to talk about. Our weekend, what are the odds? Our NFL roundup. You don't want to miss any of it. It's all next on KSL's Unrivaled.
KSL's Unrivaled. The teams you live for. The sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It is KSL's Unrivaled. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell, thanks for being with us. Going into your weekend here, very exciting because there was a bye week for the Raiders last week, which means we didn't get to play one of our most favorite pieces of sound that we have of all on KSL News Radio that you could imagine. The Silver and Black Attack is back, baby. The Raiders are playing this weekend. It's an all-pirate affair in Las Vegas.
Black Attack. Scott and Alex cover it all as the Raiders pillage and plunder their way through year number one in Las Vegas. Kidnap
and
ravage
and don't give up. And joining us, of course, is the PA announcer at the beautiful Black Pearl there in Las Vegas in the, for the Vegas Raiders, Tim Hughes, our own Tim Hughes. You transition in the weekends to full-on Raiders gear. Yeah. All black, everything.
I get the eye patch, the parrot, the whole thing.
I noticed on your desk you brought back Raiders water and Raiders popcorn.
Yeah.
We got to figure out how to get Scott and I some of that. I don't know if you can smuggle it back out. I don't know if there's a...
I can do that.
Okay. We just want any Raider gear from the stadium that I can go, this came from the heart of the pirate ship.
This is kind of funny, but there are fans that gather outside Allegiant every time, and they actually have a tailgate area.
So it's like a little tailgate. They can hang out.
They put up a big screen out there, and then they have like little corrals that you pull your car into.
Oh, that's awesome.
They're charging people $500
for
up to six people. You heard me. $500 for six people in a car, and you get a meal with that, and you get to watch the game outside.
That's very nice of them to
get
the meal.
But you can't go in the stadium.
You can't go in the stadium. Makes tons of sense.
I do carry a box of popcorn out with the Raiders logo on it, and I hand it to some small child outside the stadium after every game. Cool.
You know what I wonder? And I wonder this every single week with all these teams, these new beautiful stadiums. What it cost to just flip the light switch on and say, okay, we're going to play a game here. I would imagine that it's a pretty significant amount
of
money.
It's probably steep, yeah.
Just to not have people in there. I don't know. I'd be curious to find out what that is.
The thing is that a lot of it's recouped by the fact that the game's being played, right? And so you have it on TV and you're able to watch it. You're able to enjoy it somehow. And I think that that's what the NFL and a lot of these professional sports leagues have kind of banked on is – you know, the World Series actually has some fans there down in Texas, you know, watching these games. But it is interesting, too, because we have our why is it this way in one place and this way in another? And certainly Mark Davis, above everybody, would probably want to see people in that stadium more than anyone.
Well,
and yet it's a difficult decision.
It's worth repeating. Mark Davis has not stepped in there for a ball game.
Interesting.
He made the commitment at the beginning of the year. He told fans, I'm not going to a ball game until my fans can be at
That's
the ball
great.
Game. He's been in the building, obviously, for some other things, but he won't be in there during games.
Like to take a shower
and
something like that.
And he won't be this weekend.
You know, you have to feel like this game this week, it was a phenomenal win in Kansas City, and it was kind of a statement game. But I kind of feel like this is even more of a statement game for the Raiders in that they're trying to get above maybe being an average to mediocre team in the NFL. And this one could be such a statement for them because Tampa Bay is a very good football team. And, of course, you've got Tom Brady. What's the sense – do you have a sense of where the team is and realizing how significant this game can be moving forward?
Well, as a former player, you could tell me what off-field distractions do to your mental capacity and whether you can carry on any momentum gained from the week before. I don't know how much you've heard about this, but it was announced on Tuesday – that Trent Brown, who is the big offensive lineman that they paid a ton of money for, and he's had shoulder injuries, and he's only played, I think, in one game?
Yeah, one game.
And he's positive COVID, for COVID. Positive.
And then all the offensive linemen got sent home
the
this week.
The entire offensive line, all five of them were
the
sent
starters.
Home to quarantine. The starters. So their practice this week was with five guys from the practice squad. Oh,
five guys pizza or burgers?
Basically.
And the safety, Arnett, was also sent home to quarantine. I mean, those kinds of things, how do you plan for them? What does that do to your psyche going into a weekend where you know it's going to be a big ball game, particularly against Tampa Bay, who has a defense that does not get much attention because everybody's focused on Tom Brady and Gronkowski and the
good.
Offense. There was a great line in the press conference from Coach Gruden a couple of days ago. He said that this linebacker crew is amazing for Tampa Bay, and that the pressure they're going to be able to bring, and then put on this side of it the fact that we don't know what the offensive line sure. lineup is going to be for the Raiders. But he said, of all the things they do, they have range, they can move, they don't miss tackles. But he says, the thing that bothers me the most is they can't get tired. And he said, that bothers me.
Yeah. Well, and it'll bother, you know, after coming off a huge win for them, too. They beat Aaron Rodgers in the undefeated Green Bay Packers, and then they're coming on this week going, yeah, the defense was the thing that basically turned that whole game around with the pick six, the two possessions in a row with the interceptions. Derek Carr, the quarterback for the Raiders, a particularly hot and cold guy with the Raiders over the years, and he's on a hot streak, obviously coming off a win at Kansas City. Where's his head at, do you think, when it comes to going into a game like this where he's always got pressure on him? I mean, your Raiders quarterback and Derek Carr particularly always had a lot of pressure on him, but now you're the guy that is across from Tom Brady. I mean, you're the other quarterback in this game. Where is he at in terms of how important this game is for him and his career?
I've only been around the team, obviously, this season, but it seems like for years he has been peppered with questions from the press about his inability to do this or to do that. And he has had an amazing season. If you look at statistics, he has had an amazing season. And he's frustrated. You know, after the loss to the Bills here in Las Vegas the last time, he was really frustrated and he didn't hold back in the press conference postgame. He said he was sick and tired of it. That he wants to have more consistency and continue on his winning ways. But those that have been around the organization longer than me have said that they've never seen him more confident than he is right now. And we've talked about this in some past segments, that he's got some young receivers out there that are really showing some promise. So as he gains more confidence with those guys, and of course he's got a big tight end that almost always catches the ball,
yeah.
His confidence is going to continue to grow.
Al Davis said, just win, baby. And that will take care of everything with Derek Carr. It really will. And he's going to continue to get those questions.
I
promise you he will.
Yeah.
It's just part of the deal. So a couple of weeks ago, I said, you know, this might be the year that the Raiders go into Kansas City and win a game and a lot of the advantages.
Well, is this a victory lap for you, Scott?
No, but I do want to share a little bit of a silver, maybe a silver and black lining since, you know, it's the Raiders here. One of the advantages the Raiders have, well, they have a couple. One, that the travel, so Tampa has to travel, but two is when you have 2 weeks to prepare for a team, it gives you a massive advantage. It gives you a massive advantage in being able to rest and get yourself as fresh physically as you possibly can. And even with this issue with these offensive linemen, probably enough time to get them to be able to come back and play in the game. Because if the Raiders are going to miss their whole entire offensive line, they're going to postpone this game.
Yeah.
But having that 2 weeks to prepare is a massive advantage for the team that has that bye. And a lot of times in the NFL, you'll see teams play really well coming out of a bye, regardless of who they're playing.
You look at the offensive stats going into this game, it doesn't look a lot different. I mean, the Raiders average 30 points a game, Tampa Bay 29.5. Passing yards, rushing yards, very similar. Where the difference comes is on the defense. And the defense is going to have the same kind of game they had in Kansas City. They're going to have to find a way to pressure Tom Brady for sure. But Tampa only giving up 20 a game. The Raiders right now giving up 30 a game. And it's going to come down to health and whether this silly COVID thing throws another wrench in the works.
It's been whack-a-mole with the with the whole thing this season. I think Adam Schefter from ESPN said that. He goes, look, it was this team had this problem, it went away. The next team had a problem, it went away. The next team had a problem. So just each team, and it's going to be like this all season long. And how teams can weather
it. I hated whack-a-mole. I hated that game.
this is a worse version of that game. All right. Tim Hughes, we wish you the best of luck traveling this weekend to and from Vegas.
Raiders!
We'll talk to you again on Monday for our Silver and Black Attack. This has been fun already this season.
You got it.
So, taking the break here. We'll come back. More to go right here on KSL's Unrivaled on KSL News Radio.
Hey, welcome back to KSL's Unrivaled. I'm Scott Mitchell. He's Alex Keery. And during the break, I was debating whether I was going to come back for the segment.
Oh.
And I was about a 50-50% whether I was going to actually come back or not.
Why
but
this
is
that?
One of my favorite segments of the week, so I figured, yeah, I might as well give it the old college try there.
Okay,
and,
what Scott's
come
referring
back for
to
this.
Is what Scott's referring to is it's one of our favorite games we play over the weekend. It's our weekend. What are the odds? And so what we do is we play this music first and foremost.
What are the odds? You'll know exactly, more or less, what's going to happen. Probably. What are the odds?
Okay. So here's how the game's played. Scott gave kind of a version of it coming back here. So we give you I give you a scenario, or Scott gives me a scenario, and you tell us the percent chance that that thing will or will not happen. So it's an easy game to play. You can play it right at home. There's an at-home version. That's just you listening and playing right along. So bonus points if you come up with a jersey number to go along with it as well. So let's start things off here, Scott. Let me see here. Boy, it's like I've never done this before. Here we go. Scott, this is a Utah-based one. That's why I want you to do it first. So what are the odds that two Utah quarterbacks – end up being played this year strategically, not because one gets hurt.
Not an injury. Okay.
This is Andy Ludwig getting cute in the offense and saying, you know what? I don't know. You don't know what you're going to get. Yeah, maybe you had 114 yards of passing offense in the first half by Jake Bentley, and he threw for two touchdowns. And maybe we start the second half here with Cam Rising throwing the ball or running it on an option or something. So what are the odds that they is this even a thing, Scott? Would you even?
No, this is a real thing. It's a real thing. You see it with Taysom Hill, but you see Andy Ludwig did this a year ago with Jason Shelley. They didn't want Tyler Huntley to run the ball, so when they were going to kind of, because the running part of the quarterback is part of Andy Ludwig's offense. So it's a real thing. I don't think it's super high, but I you know what? Since it's a Utah quarterback situation, mm-hmm. I'm going to give it a 19% Scott Mitchell.
Anybody in particular with that number?
Well, me.
Okay.
Yeah. So
all right.
I'm going to do my own number, 19%.
Okay. Well, I'll do it even lower, but I'll stay with the Utah quarterback theme. I'll go with an easy Alex Smith, 11%. Was he 11?
Yeah, he was
Utah?
11.
Okay.
In fact, he may be the only other quarterback that was like a double-digit quarterback.
You know? Everybody liked to do the single-digit thing?
Yeah, they're all kind of the single digits.
All right. So there you go. The quarterback picking the quarterback number. Pulling his own number.
I got one for you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What are the odds that Zach Wilson, quarterback at BYU, throws for 500 yards or more this year in a game?
Well, he just – listen, do we want to put this kind of pressure on this guy? He just got his first 400-yard game last weekend.
Did he really?
Yes.
Oh,
and
wow.
And it was 400 yards, right on the money. So,
right on the money?
You know, I don't know, because this is a tough – This would be Kalani Sitake almost running it up. I mean,
yeah,
they'd have to do it in a lot of probably not as much time.
He'd almost have to throw for 500 yards in the first half.
Okay, so what was your record as a quarterback? How many yards do you throw in a game?
The most in a game?
631. 631 against?
Air Force. And thought it would be a record for years. Like, no one would break it. And someone broke it, like, 2 or 3 years
ago. Oh, okay. Who was it that broke it?
Someone at, like, a run-and-shoot school in Texas.
Oh, I thought you meant – but it stands as the record at Utah still.
Oh, yeah, Utah, sure.
And you won't see that one get broken in a while.
Oh, no.
Because that's just not a thing that they do now.
As long as the defensive coach is there, you'll never see that.
You're never going to see that. Yeah. Okay. Did you ever throw – how many times did you throw for over 500 in your career? Now I'm curious.
I don't know.
Handful of times?
Yeah. The first game I started, Idaho State, I threw for 511 yards.
Okay. So your first
that was
game
a record, too,
first game
way.
You ever started was 5'11". Okay.
5'11", yeah.
Well, not to brag. Okay, well, I'm going to
Well, it was. What do you want me to say?
I know. No, it's just different. I just want – I wish he would do it.
That was a record, too, by the way.
Last quarterback to throw for 500 yards for BYU, Max Hall, back in 2007 against Tulsa. So it wasn't that long ago in BYU history somebody was doing it.
No.
Let me see. I'm going to go with a Steve Sarkisian had over a 600-yard game. I'm going to go with a 12%. Sarkisian with a 12%.
Okay, all right.
Because you still have a couple of games here. He could do it against North Alabama. I mean, he could do it against
– I think it's
low. It might come against a team like San Diego State. Maybe it's a little closer, and so he's going for a bunch of yards.
It's low. I think it's going to be low just because BYU also runs the football, maybe more than back in the day. So I think it's hard, and also he'll get taken out of a game if they're blowing out someone. So I think it's a hard thing to do. I'll say it's low, but I'll say it's a little bit higher. Keep it in the quarterback vein at BYU, and I'll go 14% Gifford Nielsen.
Gifford Nielsen, not a Ty Detmer for
well, no, it's just I, no.
A Luke Staley and or Robbie Bosco 6%. You could do that one. They
That's
do the double. Low. They do the double retired jerseys because they just have all these guys who are just amazing.
Good at
getting
at
all
it,
these points. Okay, let's go. Let's jump to a. Let's jump to an NFL version of this. So the NFC East, worst league or worst division in all of the, in all of football. What are the odds that the champion of the NFC East ends up above or below 500, rather? Below 500.
What are the chances
what
of
are
that?
The odds of them being below 500?
That's going to be high.
That's going to be a high percentage
that's
chance.
That's going to be
that.
High because that's probably going to happen. I'm going to say –
because right now the Cowboys are leading it. They'd have to win six more games out of the next 10 to accomplish this.
Yes.
To go 500 or better.
Yeah.
They'd be 8-8.
Right. Ooh, six
out of 10 games is not real easy in the
so essentially, right they if they – well, yeah, that's true.
Okay. And they'd have to do it with a backup quarterback.
Right.
The rest
say,
of them have to win seven out of the next 10.
Yeah. I'm going to say Reggie White, when he played for the Eagles, because that's in the NFC East.
Yeah, yeah.
92%.
Okay. I'm going to go – it's also going to be a high percentage chance someone's going to end up below 500 for me as well. I'm going to say a Drew Pearson, 88%.
Ooh, not a Michael Irvin.
No, look, Mike Irvin gets all the credit, but the 88 that –
So you're going old school then.
I'm going to go old school, Drew
okay.
Pearson.
All right.
Still staying with the Cowboys, though, and I'll go 88%.
All right, I got one. We'll shift to – let's go to college football in general. Minnesota upsets Michigan because the Big Ten is starting
Ooh,
to play
Big
here
Ten.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, the Big Ten has entered the field.
Yes, they have entered the field.
Oh, fun. Ooh. I'm going to go with a – look, Minnesota – the thing is that Minnesota – it's not that Minnesota is – they had a great season last year. I don't think they'll match what they did last year, but I do think they're this – I think they're a better team than they have been in the last decade for sure. And I think Michigan just has the propensity to underperform. Sorry, Jim Harbaugh. I'm going to go with a 54%, a Brian Urlacher 54%
Minnesota
that they upset him.
Is, I think, a one-hit wonder. Michigan is always underperforming, I agree, but it's usually against Ohio State. so I'm going to go Tom Brady's college number, 10.
That's what we need. 10%. 10%, that's a good number. But here's the thing. We need him. If you're a fan of anything, if you're a Pac-12 fan, if you're a BYU sneaking in the college football playoff somehow fan, you want Michigan to beat Ohio State this year.
Yeah.
You're rooting for the Wolverines. Not until that game, though. So, yeah. Ooh, I hope it happens. Scott, this weekend, local game being played. Welcome to the arena. Also, the Mountain West. And big game starting off the year for the Aggies. This is a Boise State and Utah State matchup. What are the odds the Broncos get upset by the Aggies?
I think this is a good game for Utah State. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, shoot, they've got half of Utah players on their team now. they're pretty loaded. I'll say it's a Mike Singletary 50%.
Oh.
It's a 50-50 shot.
What was Gary Anderson's number in college?
I think Gary was 56.
Okay. I'm going to go with Gary. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. I'm going to say 56% chance that the Aggies get the upset.
Okay.
Because they do. They're flying under the radar. They've just been practicing away up there. And, look, Boise's always been pretty good. But where's this game being played, though?
It's at
Boise.
It's
in Logan. It's in Logan. Yes.
Oh. It's a home game.
Yeah, I'm sticking with my 56% then, man. Stick with it. Okay.
You're a homer.
I'm a total homer.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's all the time we have for our What Are the Odds here. So let's take the break. When we come back, got more to go here on the program. More games to play on the weekend. Let me see here. What do we have? Well, I mean, just like our fun stuff we do. We've got the NFL Roundup coming up. Got our two-minute drill. So many things to talk about. So stay with us here on KSL News Radio.
KSL's unrivaled. The teams you live for. The sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back. It is KSL's Unrivaled. Thanks for being with us going into your weekend. So many things that are going on. You got Utah State playing their first game of the year. We were just talking about that. And you've got the Big Ten back in action. So you just have more options to be able to watch more football this weekend, college football-wise. And we're very excited about it. Now, on the professional side of things, if you didn't hear our conversation with the PA voice of the Las Vegas Raiders, Tim Hughes. That was in our first segment of this hour. You can go back and listen to the podcast. Just download the KSL Sports app for any of those. Scott, you have the KSL Sports app, right?
Of course I do, Alex.
Do you ever download and listen to yourself on the old on the? You just go, I want to listen to myself. I want to see how I sounded on that.
Occasionally I do.
Oh, well, good for you. That's
it's good. Becoming easier and easier. I'll just say the more and more that I do this, the easier and easier it is, because I know what my voice sounds like now. And
yes.
I go,
you know, people and people who hear their own voice recorded for a living, you notice now, too, like when people hear their voice and they go, oh, my gosh, is that what I sound like? Because your head voice is different than the one you hear. But now it's the same, right, for you? Like it's the same? You hear yourself?
Yes.
And
yes.
Yeah. It's all blended into one. Really, I can't even distinguish your voice and my voice anymore. It's become one. That's how close we are.
Symbiotic, yes.
It's very good. Yeah. It's the NFL Roundup. Let's kick things off.
Rivaled NFL Roundup. Premium grade A pro football stories from your two hosts, a former NFL quarterback and the other guy. It's the Unrivaled NFL Roundup.
Almost sound like a plumber. A plumber NFL quarterback. A former NFL quarterback and the other guy. That's me. I'm the other guy. No problem. I'll be
here.
I'm
the plumber.
Let me ask you just. Let me just ask you. This is almost an Ask Scott Anything type question. I want you to be. What's the game that you hated the most? That you reflect on and you go, that's the one thing. That's a day I wish I could have back. Like the one that keeps you up at night.
And you want to ask me this question?
Scott, come on. You're known for your honesty, your self-reflection, even answering the tough questions. What's the one that you like go, I hated that. I hate that. That was the worst game. I know that if I had it back, maybe things would have changed for me in my career. Oh boy.
Yeah, I'm
this got weird, didn't it?
Well, no, it's I would say the last game I played in Detroit.
Okay. So
I don't know, though, because even though we lost the game, I mean, we still played pretty good offensively. So it wasn't.
Yeah, it wasn't like a total meltdown.
No,
type
it
situation.
Was just unfortunate that, you know, that we lost the way we lost, I guess, and that I threw an interception for a touchdown. That was kind of hard. But had that not happened. Had the game not ended that way, that would have probably been
changed things in Detroit for you.
And you know, we were in 1995. We were playing really good, and lost to Philadelphia in the playoffs. We were on a roll, and
right.
we
kinda, and that's usually the team you vote. That's usually the
we
team
kinda
you go
thought,
after.
We kind of walked in there a little bit overconfident, I think. But we played really poorly offensively.
Well,
across the board.
Sorry. I didn't know it was going to be that difficult for us. You know, I didn't know it was going to be an awkward situation.
Well, you asked.
I know, but I thought you would just be, you know, I didn't want to turn it into a, as sands through the hourglass, so are the days of our life. I didn't want it to be too dramatic, but here we are. Scott, the NFL Roundup this week. I want to start off with this one. Sean Payton declines to say if Michael Thomas will play on Sunday. Michael Thomas, the wide receiver for the Saints, was suspended. He's had some back and forth with the coaches. That is not a good situation, and it makes things worse when you're losing, or maybe it's been made worse by the fact that they've been losing.
Well, and he's such a good player, and they need him. And maybe he's frustrated with who knows what. Maybe he has personal issues. You just never know. Maybe there is a personality conflict. That's a real thing in the NFL. I was taught very, very early in my career that no matter how you felt about your coaches, you always publicly and around them, everything was always good. You did not want to burn bridges with coaches. And it sounds like Michael Thomas may have done this a little bit. Right. When you're a good player, you usually end up on the field, and it's got to be something pretty dramatic to keep you from playing.
So it's like this is when the friction bubbles up in public, that means it's really bad behind the scenes.
Yeah. Ugh. It's people are maneuvering for what's the inevitable to come, and whether it's him being traded or who knows, or maybe not playing the rest, and he just gets demanding on what he wants to do or where he wants to be. You know, most receivers in the NFL are kind of a little bit of divas and prima donnas. Most of them. I'm not going to say all of them.
Come on.
Well, you look at, some of the most obnoxious players in NFL history.
I think we know it.
And the top 20 are all receivers. It's just like,
and quarterbacks are known for being the ego guys, but
in a quiet, kind of confident way.
Right.
Like they're not
humble,
demonstrative.
Like a humble arrogance. Arrogance.
Yes. Yes. Completely.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Self-deprecating singularity.
Yes.
All right. So going back to the Saints, and these are all bad storylines if you're Saints fans. Marcus Williams, of course, was a former Utah Ute, fired his agent during a contract year. Scott, that is an off-the-field distraction as a player that you do not want to have happening. And you fire your agent. You told me that's really bad news for somebody in the middle of their year, especially during the middle of a contract year.
Typically, a lot of guys will fire their first agent. And the reason is most guys take money coming out of college.
And they got to pay this guy back.
They've been a poor college student. Yeah. And so they're a little bit kind of taken advantage of. The NFL's done a pretty good job of kind of minimizing this. But there were some guys that were some pretty crooked dudes that, said, hey, we'll give you, $100,000 in a car and whatever. And then they charge the player, a crazy amount of money, to 10% or whatever of whatever contract they negotiate. And Marcus Williams probably didn't have a great contract his first year. And he's like, man, I'm hardly making any money, or yeah, I'm hardly this, or I'm hardly that. Not uncommon. And because a lot of these agents that are sleazy are kind of they're high profile. They're flamboyant and kind of boisterous and promise you the world kind of thing. And that's not who you really need.
You didn't have you've always had a good relationship with your
agent. And my agent was typically the second guy. He says, I got a lot of business the second time around because players saw how I treated my players. They saw the success my players had. And he says, I had a lot of really good players who ended up with really good contracts. And so that's all these players want. They want a good contract. They want someone to treat them right. But my agent, if you looked at him, he's nothing to write home about. I mean, he's just kind of he looks like your typical accountant type of guy. But that's what I liked about him, that he was, that he was honest and that he really, I always felt like had my best interest at heart. This does not surprise me at all.
Well, I just hope he figures it out. And the last
I wish I was an agent. I'd be a good agent.
You would be?
Oh, heck yeah!
Because you've been in the room.
I know exactly what's going on. Yeah.
Well, that's and you've seen the guys get ripped off before, and you're so many of these guys end up getting ripped off, and that's a tough deal. Mike McCarthy, speaking of where there's smoke, there's fire. The head coach of the Cowboys has had to address the report of anonymous Cowboy players that have gone after the coaching staff already, saying that they're unprepared, things like that. And we talked about it earlier in the week when the anonymous reports came up. How do you handle that as a head coach? What are you supposed to say? Oh, no, we're fine. I mean, I'm trying to imagine how you get control of a locker room that is talking behind your back and you're losing at the same time and your star player's gone.
Yeah, there's something that's being communicated to these players from the coaches whatever that they're not connecting with. And I don't know if it's Mike McCarthy has become too old school for this modern player. Who knows? I don't know. But you have to talk to a lot of these guys differently than maybe back in a different era. If I'm Mike McCarthy, though, I'm really concerned that publicly players are talking about the coaching staff. And it's not a good move. And if the players are doing it, it's a dumb thing to do in the beginning. But if I'm Mike McCarthy, I'm going into team and I'm going to say, you kind of have these moments where you have these like really awkward team meetings, you know, where everyone airs their feeling. And it right. sounds like the Dallas Cowboys probably need one of these meetings where they air their feelings. But Mike McCarthy's got to say, if you've got a problem, you come to me, you talk to me, we keep all of this in-house.
Let's take the break here. We're going to air our grievances off the air with one another next. Just during the break. You'll hear only the good stuff, though, when we come back. 2-minute drill to wrap up the show for the weekend. Stay right here with us on KSL's Unrivaled.
All right, welcome back to KSL's Unrivaled. Dead.
Revel de.
Revel de. I need a room. I'm Scott Mitchell. He's Alex Carey. And, you know, I can't get over these NFL stadiums that are these
just empty,
multi-billion dollar structures.
We make fun of the Olympics,
sit
right?
They're empty.
We make fun of the Olympics after, like, the Olympics show up in a city, famously. You know, China's Summer Olympic venues, so many of them have just gone to pot, you know. The Athens Games, they're just like, they look yeah. like they were from thousands of years ago because right. they've been that abandoned now.
Yeah.
And we do it differently in the United States. We like to build it, and before any game was even played there, we like to abandon it. We go full on.
It's insane.
I just, you know, Tim was talking about this earlier. Tim Hughes came on talking about the Raiders. He's going to the stadium again this weekend, and Allegiant Stadium, this beautiful place with that big you've seen the torch in there, right, Scott? The big,
yeah,
like 300-foot, you know, eternal flame or whatever they fire up there. And it's just as interesting to me to see SoFi Stadium down in L.A. It's really sad. Mm-hmm. I'm excited about them getting back and people showing back up. California, you feel like it'll be a long way away that people will be able to enjoy SoFi Stadium, but – yeah, it's a weird situation, but let's not focus on the negative. Scott, let's do the positive stuff.
Let's do it.
We got the 2-minute drill here. That music that you hear that is iconic and amazing brings us to this portion of the show every day. So what do we have, Scott, that we do on the 2-minute drill?
All right, well, like a football game, got to hurry down the field and score a touchdown, kick a field goal, win a game. Same thing on our show. We got a lot to talk about at the end of our program, not a lot of time, so we talk a little bit about a lot of mm-hmm. things. We hurry down the show, finish it. We get a trophy, we smile, and everyone goes home happy.
We smile. Hello.
You usually smile when you win the 2-minute drill, just saying. Never seen anyone frown that won it.
They win the 2-minute drill, and they go.
And they smile.
I feel like Aaron Rodgers would be that guy, though. Walk off the field.
Yeah.
My son noticed something.
I can't believe these coaches, what they're calling.
Yeah, yeah.
I had to bail them out at the end of this game again. Again.
My son asked me this question over the weekend. He goes, what's up with Aaron Rodgers' chin strap? It's one of those ones from the 70s, like the paper thin ones, and it's
chin
only
strap
one,
I wore, by the
it's,
way.
I know. It's the one single one.
It's the chin strap I wore.
And it's one button, and I said, you know where he got that? That was a Brett Favre thing that he learned.
Everyone had a chin strap
I know,
like that back in my day.
But he didn't just do it. When the play is over, he'll undo the chin strap, or when he's going off the field, he'll undo the chin strap and button it on the other side, like that little whoop. And I'm like, Brett Favre used to do that. He taught it to Aaron Rodgers. I go, son, that's the elder passing.
Let me tell you what I learned day one in the NFL.
What?
It was about your chin strap. Okay, you don't wear one.
What
when
do you
you're
mean?
When
Why?
You're a quarterback and you go to practice, the chin strap is off. So you can't have this elaborate, you know.
Why would you not wear it in practice? I would not.
Because you never got hit, and it was annoying to have that thing strapped around your chin.
But you have to do it during the game. Why wouldn't you, like, it would be annoying during the game. You got to be used to it,
man. It's the whole ego thing of the NFL quarterbacks do not wear chin straps in practice. I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying that's what I learned, and that's what you did.
We got to bring back the single bar. We got to bring back the single bar.
Now that's a dumb thing. I wouldn't want that. But
Joe Theismann, of all the things that he could have broken on his body, the leg was not the one. I always thought it was going to be his nose with that one single bar chin or the single bar face mask was one of the most ridiculous things I've ever seen. But that being said, Scott, I think it's funny that the chin strap thing was passed down. Marino taught you, don't wear a chin strap, kid. And then here you were, not wearing a chin strap in practice. Okay.
I wore it, then Marino would have to wear it. He's like, you don't wear one.
UNLV might actually be open as a stadium for fans to come in. Now, UNLV, of course, their football stadium will be Allegiant Stadium. And UNLV says they might be able to actually allow fans in for games this year. I don't know how, but they say that it's going to be 10 days out from their first UNLV football game at Allegiant Stadium. They're still wondering about whether or not fans will be there. So I guess that the local municipality says you can kind of have fans, but the Raiders have decided against it and have said, no, we'll just wait till we can actually get all the people in there. How crazy would it be if the Running Rebels would be able to be the first ones to have fans inside Allegiant Stadium?
Well, I think you're going to have some kind of Raider uprising with the black hole and all of the fans, because they'll say that if this is a government issue, then we should be allowed to get in. If they can do it in college, we should be able to do it as Raiders fans. And I really hope that they do. I really do. I just think it's so sad that this isn't happening. And because I want to go in a stadium, Alex. I just want to go in. I want to look. I want to peek. I want to see what's in there.
Well, let's go down and watch a Miami Dolphins versus the Jacksonville Jaguars kind of game down in Florida. Let's do it, man.
All right. Get a ticket.
Tickets are only $600 a piece, so
I might be able to get a ticket there.
Now, that's what I'm saying. Use your connections. Let's go. Just to at least get a ticket to the game to get in the stadium. Talk to your guys. Talk to that guy who got you the overnight passport illegally.
It wasn't illegal.
It wasn't illegal. It was just insane that somebody could pull that up. Scott, next up on the old two-minute drill here, I want to bring up something up about the Bills cutting, and this is part of the thing, but Quentin Spain, 7 months after he got a $15 million extension, has been cut. How does that happen?
That one's kind of baffled me, other than he may be a guy that just someone else really established themselves and he never really maybe did. I mean, this is a guy who's well thought of and has done well with his opportunities and appeared to be a guy that was like, I'm a legitimate guy in the NFL. I think it was kind of a one-year deal, so it's just kind of like whatever. And maybe there was no, maybe if they cut him, they didn't have to pay him. I don't know what it was, but it just felt like it was a situation that probably just didn't work out. I'm guessing.
So I don't know how much that money was guaranteed, but I mean the Bills just must be beside themselves in. You know, I know it's part of business, so I know that teams roll the dice on guys all the time.
Sometimes these cuts are made to make a statement. Like, ooh, look, we gave this guy a $15 million extension, and he wasn't working out, and we cut him. And you better toe the line. People better get it back together here, or you're next. It could be that. As I think about it, it probably is that.
That's interesting. All right. Next up. Final thing I want to talk about on the old two-minute drill. The last thing we're talking about this entire week, Scott. I've been wondering, too, about this. Michael Jordan says that he's not been a good coach because he, quote, hasn't had patience for coaching. Is that a line of garbage? Or why is it that these superstar players can't translate it into coaching oftentimes?
Because a lot of times superstar players did things that coaches couldn't coach. I mean, most of the time. And a good coach just says, hey, I got Michael Jordan, I'll just let him go with things. The thing with Michael Jordan, he just doesn't have a Michael Jordan to say, yeah, you and Scotty go take care of things and we'll throw in a Dennis Rodman and give you a couple of, you know, third wheel sidekicks like Steve Kerr and John Paxton kind of deal. You know, good coaches typically have really good players, and that's unfortunately, you know, that's just kind of the way it is. People argued that maybe Don Shula in his day didn't have as good of players, or even a guy like Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick didn't have superstars, but he really understood the game of football and understood both sides. He understood the offense and the defensive side of football. And, you know, and a coach like that's very rare. And a superstar athlete, you know, doesn't have to build a knowledge of things like that, because there's just certain things they get away with and can do that other people can't.
Scott, that's the end of the program for this week. What are you going to be watching this weekend, dude?
I want to watch Boise State and Utah State.
No, BYU, Texas State, huh? Okay.
Yeah, I'll kind of just peek in and out of it.
You'll meander just to see if Zach Wilson gets
I want to see how Zach
yards.
Wilson's playing.
All right. We'll take the break here. For Scott Mitchell, I'm Alex Keery. Thanks for being with us. We'll be back again next week to break everything down over the weekend on a Monday edition of Kissels and Rival. We'll see you then, everybody.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.